I want to take a break from the podcast right now, and I want to give you a gift. And I want to do that to thank you for being a listener. I put my heart and soul into this podcast. I love interviewing today's experts, researchers, MDs, psychologists, sleep trainers, you name it. I hope you feel inspired to take care of yourselves and your families. And I just want to thank you for being a listener and hanging out with me. So the code podcast10 is going to give you a one-time $10 off code at kellylevesque.com, your next order of protein powder. You can either use that on my grass-fed beef isolate protein or on my new vegan chocho bean protein. Now, here's what I love about my protein powders. It's 3 ingredients or less. So we don't use fillers, emulsifiers, no fortified vitamins or minerals. It's easy to digest and naturally made without any enzymes or chemicals like hexane. So it's 3 ingredients. With my grass-fed beef isolate, that's 100% grass-fed beef, and it's made in the way that you would make bone broth. So just heat and water. And we dehydrate it, that end product, to get that collagen-rich protein powder that your whole family can drink. It can be added to coffees, to smoothies, and you can get it in vanilla, chocolate, and unflavored. I want to point out that my vanilla and chocolate is made with organic vanilla bean, organic cacao, and the only sweetener used is organic monk fruit. We don't use any maltodextrin. Our monk fruit is 100% ground monk fruit, and it's organic. And with my vegan line, I'm so excited to have launched this and to have it out into the world. It's a regenerative bean from South America called the chocho bean. And the chocho bean is the most superior plant-based protein powder you can get your hands on, because not only is it a complete protein, but the process is made with heat and water only. They're crushed and soaked, and what that end product results in is an anti-nutrient-free protein powder. So you're not gonna have any lectins, phytates, or oxalates in your protein powder. Makes it super easy to digest, and it's really, really delicious and robust in cooking as well. So I love it if I want a thicker smoothie or a smoothie bowl. And I also love it in my baked goods, from my cookies to my muffins, pancakes, and breads. It's the perfect protein addition. So if you want to give either of these proteins a try, or you've already been purchasing these proteins and want to take advantage of this special deal, the code PODCAST10 is going to get you $10 off for being a listener here at the Be Well by Kelly podcast. So head to kellylevesque.com or bewellbykelly.com. Put the protein you'd like to purchase in your cart and use the code PODCAST10 for $10 off. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in.
It's painful some days to see the food and know that the kids were excited to see it. They were excited to have it put on their tray. They are excited to take the first couple bites of it, right? But then chaos ensues and they don't eat enough of it.
Barb McCura is a school nutrition director and a consultant who builds school meal programs based on from-scratch cooking with clean, healthy ingredients and farm-to-table relationships. Barb has worked in school nutrition for 33 years in both rural and metro districts. At the heart, her mission is getting kids engaged in choosing wholesome foods and increasing their knowledge around healthy food and lifestyles. Her effort is transforming school cafeterias into fresh fruit and vegetable wonderlands and training her staff to become engaged food coaches. And it's her passion that has led to a student body of adventurous eating veggie lovers. Barb, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you. I am obviously obsessed with kids' nutrition now that I have 2 little ones, and I'm looking at what is coming up for us, and that is school nutrition programs, hot lunches, and the like. So I wanted to bring you on. You are the director of school nutrition in the Hopkins School District. So you've been doing this for such a long time. You have a consulting company called Child Nutrition Lab in the hopes to help other districts really elevate their nutrition program. I mean, you are the expert in this space, and I just want to thank you for your time. I want to welcome you onto the podcast and hopefully learn from you in regards to where we went wrong in this country when it came to building out these programs, mm-hmm. and where some of the problems happened and what we can do for the future. So first, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your passion in the space and for donating your time.
Yeah, well, I can tell right away that we are going to be BFFs, because I am equally as obsessed with bringing really good child nutrition to kids. I just think it's one of the most important things that we can do to help elevate their health and ensure their success as they go through their academic years and life, right? As they lead into adulthood and learn how to become good human beings.
That's right. It is the foundation, the base layer of what makes us feel energetic. It impacts our ability to learn. It plays such a major role in our day-to-day. So before we get there, I'd love to know how you got excited about becoming the director of nutrition in a school district. And like, when did you get your first job in this space and what did it look like then?
Yeah. Well, I kind of stumbled into it, actually. I've always been a foodie. I grew up on a farm, 8 children and mom and dad. And I was the 7th of 8, and I was always right next to my mother and grandmother, who were always in the kitchen cooking and preserving foods. We had a huge garden, that kind of stuff. And so throughout all of my jobs, I was always in food service. And I was able to land this really great job as being a dining hall manager at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. And everything was from scratch there at that college. And it was just the most incredible food. And I had so much fun with the students. And it was just the best job ever. But it took 70 hours a week, pretty regularly. And so I was working for a contract company at the time. And they had a contract down the road, 10 miles down the road at a school in Faribault. And they said, why don't you try applying for it? And so I did. And when I learned more about it, I said, Monday through Friday, like 8 to 4. Yes, like check me into that job, right? With when you're in food service, I mean, those are just unheard of days and hours. And so I kind of stumbled into it that way. I started the job by introducing foods and to kids and to get them excited about it and get them engaged with it. When I was at Carleton, we used to have this suggestion board, and it was quite the conversation that I had with the students back and forth through the suggestion boards of things that they wanted to see, tastes that they wanted to experience, something that wasn't so good. It was just really fun. So I don't care like what age I'm engaging with people in every aspect of it. So that's how I got started in child nutrition down there. And it wasn't too much longer after that that I moved from a contract company into a self-op operation is what we call it in child nutrition, where the school district itself operates the school nutrition program. And I worked in a town called Owatonna for about 15 years. It was a smaller rural town. And that was a lot of fun. Learned a lot, cut my teeth on all of the aspects of not having some big corporate system drive how we did things and our financial reporting and everything else. I learned how to be more self-sufficient and work more directly with organizations like Minnesota Department of Education. And soon enough, there was a job at Hopkins Public Schools that opened up, and I applied for it. I was really interested in some of their early work that they did with transforming school meals, and it wasn't quite successful. And so when they tapped me on the shoulder to ask me to come and interview, I gladly took it. And when I started work there, I also started taking a course through Institute for Integrative Nutrition, holistic health coach course. And when I took that course is when everything, like all the things I'd been trying to learn over the years, like everything fell into place for me of what we needed to do and how we could do it there at Hopkins. And so since 2009, we've been taking off, you know, popcorn chicken, chicken nuggets and breaded chicken patties and corn dogs and commercial pizza, all those kind of things, and replacing it with items like garlic baked chicken breast, chicken tikka masala made from scratch. We do meatless Monday. We do lots and lots and lots of fruits and vegetables. And that's actually what we really focus a lot of our efforts on. We have these beautiful fresh fruit and vegetable bars. And every day we put out a minimum of 4 different fresh vegetables and 3 different fruits per day. And that's the first thing that kids see. When they come into the cafeteria, they see the fresh fruit and vegetable bar because we're trying to send them subliminal messages throughout their experience as they come through the cafeteria lines of what we want them to focus on. And so when we make those fresh fruit and vegetable bars, really beautiful, and they are, every time I walk into one of our serving areas, my heart just smiles because they're just amazingly beautiful. Our staff do a wonderful job. And so the students are immediately drawn to trying things on there because it looks so good. And they have an empty tray, right? And so they are inclined to try lots of different things. And so then they fill up their tray with fruits and vegetables. Then they go on into the serving line and get their entree, which might be a roasted teriyaki chicken drumstick, which if we gave that to them first, it wouldn't look very good on their tray all by itself because it's just one drumstick, right? And so when they put the fruits and vegetables on there first, they're filling up their trays with that and they're excited about how their tray looks. And then you put the drumstick on, the tray looks full then, right? But if you do it the other way, it's a little bit harder to convince them that our meals are satisfying and fulfilling. We have our own roasted marinara sauce in the falls. We buy thousands and thousands of pounds of tomatoes from our farmer, Greg, out at Riverbend Farm. And the staff take and roast those in the oven with onion and garlic, salt and pepper, fresh herbs like oregano, basil. And then they take and they cool it down and then they put it into our large braising pans and they have a very large stick blender and they puree the roasted tomatoes into a sauce. And then we take and we freeze it and we use it throughout the school year in things like marinara sauce, pizza sauce, Italian meatballs, those kind of things. Our staff are just amazing at the things that they will do to create things from scratch for the kids. You know, one year they asked if they could do from scratch mashed potatoes. You know, can we try that? And it's like, whose school nutrition staff ask if they can try something that is going to be more work for them, right? But they didn't want to use the instant potatoes anymore. So we've learned lots of little tricks along the way of how to send those subliminal messages to the kids about the fruits and vegetables.
It's so inspiring and it's so exciting to hear that you know your farmer and that the kids are being exposed to these fruits and veggies every single day. Because when we look at the research, when it comes to acceptance of vegetables, I mean, those early years, the flavor window from when they're in utero to, let's say, 18 months, acceptance is a lot easier. But as they move into toddler years and elementary school years, they become more picky and they have opinions. Even seeing those fruits and veggies is an exposure point for them that makes it normal and increases the chances that they're going to be excited about it. So whether it's like 3 months of just staring at the celery on the veggie tray, and then one day they decide to just try it, that's what makes a really big difference. You know, I'm curious, working for a large corporation that has a contract versus maybe a school district like Hopkins, where they can get excited about school nutrition. What were some of the differences, like benefits working with a big corporation, challenges with a big corporation? And then the flip side, what are the benefits that Hopkins has and maybe the disadvantages not having a big corporate contract?
Really good question. So some of the advantages of working for a corporation is that you really learn more about the operational and financial systems that can be built to support the operations of the school meal program. You know, it's the biggest restaurant in town every day, right? And we know how much work it is to run restaurants. And so feeding thousands of meals every day, you really need to have good financial savvy and operational experience. And the corporation, you know, that's where they make their bread and butter is in efficiencies, right? And so they really build those systems and they reinforce those, the use of them with you all the time. When you are working in just self-op, school nutrition programs are its own operation inside of a school where everything else is has to do with academic learning. Mm-hmm. And so you're operating in isolation without a lot of systems that are developed to help you with those operational and financial decisions that lead to good outcomes. Mm-hmm. So you expend a lot more effort trying to exist in that world when you don't have some of those experiences and opportunities to learn about how to set up good systems, to monitor, to make changes. Like when we were doing our changes, transitioning from convenience foods to scratch foods and raw foods, we had to calculate out what those changes in costs would be and how could we recover costs somewhere else. And so a lot of that is what I learned when I was in the Marriott Management School, but that's not available to many school nutrition directors. And there are some systems, some associations that give those opportunities to people, but you have to carve out the time out of your days to take these online courses and stuff, right? Which school nutrition jobs are generally very understaffed and they can barely, and overregulated, which means a lot of paperwork. So they can barely find time to get all the requirement stuff done, let alone take some of these additional courses, right? What the benefit is of doing self-op is that you get to design what it is you want. You know, as long as your community supports it, or you can convince your community to support it, you get to design what it is that you want. With, I think that it's very helpful to be very inclusive of all of the staff who are also working in the program. We had many, many different committees to help us develop like a 5- and 10-year plan of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. We took and bit off small little projects and areas of improvement each year until we gained momentum. And then it was just like a snowball going down the hill, right? Kind of small in the beginning, but then, you know, by the 5th year of it, our staff were just full steam ahead and they just wanted to do anything and everything. And so when you involve the staff, you get a lot more of their pride factor and involvement and engagement. And I'd have to say, I think that's a little bit more difficult to do when you have, when you're working in a contract environment, because it's really them kind of telling you everything. And so it's harder for the staff to find that creativity and engagement and being told what's going to be done and how it's going to be done.
Definitely. I could see being told, like, you're just going to make this box of mashed potatoes today. Oh. And that's what you're doing. Like, there's no inspiration there. Mm-hmm. It's just following the rules, and without creativity, you don't really feel like you have ownership over anything. When you moved over from Marriott and a contract system to self-op, what efficiencies did you take with you that you learned into Hopkins School District, that where you thought like, oh, like I can take some of these things that I learned and bring them to this school and improve. And then on top of that, you've obviously improved the nutrition that these kids are getting every single day. But what were some of those operational things, if someone's tuning in that is in a self-op school, what can they be doing to make sure that they, you know, aren't blowing their budget and they can do these really big, amazing transformational things on their school level?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think developing some type of a financial monitoring system is really important. And as I said, school nutrition programs operating in schools is a whole different animal than how schools handle their finances. And so we're oftentimes left of our own devices to try and figure that out. But there are great organizations out there like Chef Ann's Lunchbox. She has some financial monitoring tools that are free for school nutrition programs to use. It's going to take some elbow grease to put in your own specific information for your school district, your programs that you have, but it's a great foundation. But you know, building your budget so that you are making good decisions with your staffing, making sure that you're having adequate staffing. And staffing is about, for us, it's about 60% of our annual budget. So our food cost is around 30%. Our staffing cost is about 60% as operating ratios, and other costs run around 7-10%. And many school nutrition programs that are using convenience foods, it is more like 50, 40, and 10. 50% labor cost, 40% food cost, and 10% other costs. And so you have a transition period there, as because it's not good to just like flip the light switch, right, and change from convenience food to scratch foods. going to be overwhelming. You're going to have a period of time where you really have to monitor all your costs, because your food cost isn't going to go from 40 to 30 overnight. But your labor cost is going to go up from 50 to 60 kind of quickly, because all of a sudden they're needing more time to have that confidence to handle all these raw foods, mm-hmm. And to develop their new methods and all that kind of stuff. So you have to really monitor all of your expenses pretty closely to make sure that you can meet the financial outcomes that your district is setting for you. You have to build a sense of confidence with your team that they can work from with foods that are raw and make foods from scratch, right? They've kind of lost that thinking that they can do it.
We all have. I feel like that's something, right? That even home chefs have. Like, why would they make something from scratch if they can buy it in a jar, get it in a can, get it in a bottle, and it feels like overwhelming till you do it once or twice. Yeah. And then you know, wow, this is actually, I know exactly what's in this now, and it's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fear of working with raw foods in kitchens too, right? Because kids can be so much more susceptible to getting foodborne illnesses and that. And we work with some fragile children in our school districts and that. So when we were transitioning, you know, they're like, and the first thing we did, we just did one thing. We took off popcorn chicken. We left all the other breaded chicken patties on. We took off popcorn chicken, replaced it with a raw chicken breast. And everybody was so anxious about it. Like, what are we going to do? You know, we can't do that in our schools. What if we make somebody sick? And I had to go back and remind them. I said, you know, there's quite a few of you in the room who have been in school nutrition about as long as I have. And back in the 1980s, we didn't get anything but raw food, right? Yeah. And you had to cook it. And they're like, yeah, we kind of went through all the things that we used to get and everything used to be raw. And I said, and what was our food safety training like back then? A little bit, not so much. Not really our focus. That, you know, we had to know about it. But, and I said, how many kids did you make sick then?
Yeah.
They're like, oh. And I said, so now what's our food safety program like? We have these whole HACCP procedures and manuals, and we train annually on it, reinforce monthly and everything. I said, you guys have the skills to do this. Like, let's not be afraid of it. Let's just take this one opportunity and gain our confidence, and then we can build from there. And that's exactly what happened, is that we just did that one thing. They learned all the right methods to handle, produce, so that they wouldn't cross-contaminate, you know, cook it well enough, hold it so that it had quality. And once they got that down, they're like, okay, now we can do this, you know, because it's different cooking in your home as opposed to cooking for thousands, right? And so helping them build that confidence that they knew what they needed to know in order to be able to do it safely and with quality. So
I just look at the wins though. Like I realize that it would cost more to have someone in the kitchen longer, to be cooking things from scratch, not throwing frozen popcorn chicken on a tray and blasting it with heat. But like, look at that, the belief that these convenience foods are actually, you know, the belief is that we're using them because they're so much cheaper and that they are, you know, we couldn't do it without them. And I just think about how clunky it's become as a system because we're worried about foodborne illnesses. We have all the corporate handbooks and trainings and things that slow these large institutions or large school lunch programs down. It's a lot easier for them to just create a system where they're buying all this processed food. They're paying less to, you know, the women or men working in the school nutrition program. They have zero autonomy. They have zero motivation to get creative, to have ownership, to fuel the future, which is our kids' nutrition. And you're telling me through practice, the chefs and the people working in your kitchens are probably happier in their jobs. They're feeling more confident. They're learning how to cook for themselves too. Whatever they're learning in the kitchen at school, they're taking it home, and it's costing you less. It's just the transition period of how do we get from processed MSG, like low quality beige foods to this beautiful veggie and fruit bar, there is a transition period and you've done it and you're hoping to help people do it. And it's just, yeah. I just think you're such a bright light in the space, and that it's proof is in the pudding. Like we can look at regenerative farms like white oak pastures, where they are sequestering more carbon than they're admitting. The nutrition of their animals and their plants is higher than any other farm. And they are showing that they've healed that their little piece of the planet. Mm-hmm. And yet people are like, but that's harder. And mm-hmm. that takes longer. And it takes more elbow grease, or it takes more work. But the payoff is there for the health of everyone.
Absolutely.
Those kids to everyone working for you. Like mm-hmm. what an amazing, I mean, just like really thankful for you and for that just outlook on all of this, because I think people think, oh, it's just too broken. We can't fix this system.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it is very broken. I'm going to say, like yesterday on my IG account, I just posted a fact that over 55% of our school kitchens are in bad need of repair, upgrade, or expansion. And so one of the things early on that I learned when we were making these transitions is that we were asking our staff to perform small miracles every day just to get the meal out. I was out at the kitchens helping them through some recipes and being short-staffed. And I know my way around a kitchen pretty well. As I said, I've always been in it. I've cooked in institutional kitchens and that. And I was like, holy man, like this is not sustainable. Yeah. And so later that afternoon, I had a pre-planned meeting with the superintendent, and I was fairly new in the job. And he asked me how I was doing. And I said, doing okay. I'm struggling a bit because the kitchens aren't quite in the state of repair that I had imagined and was told that they were in when I was hired. And so now working in them alongside of our staff and trying to help them transform our school nutrition program, I'm realizing that we're going to ask them to do small miracles every day, and it is unsustainable. Most of our kitchens had never been hardly touched since they were built, like in the 1960s. And that is so common in many, many school districts across our country. Mm-hmm. And so he said, well, what do you need? And I said, well, we're going to have to go into remodel and redesign these kitchens. And so that's one of the things that we've done. And it's just one of the really critical factors of our success. I just can't underscore that enough. Our community believed in what we were doing, wanted what we were doing enough that they supported different referendums and levies so that we could rebuild our kitchens. You know, we just redid our high school, and it's amazing. And the students are absolutely thrilled with the foods that they get there. And it costs $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And that's just one. We've done nine, you know, so it takes a lot of investment by the community to say, we think this is worth it. And that is also then sending a message to the school administration as well, right? Like, we want you guys to pay attention to what's going on during the meal times, because we as parents think it's really important for us, for our children, to be nourished and fed well when they're in your care during the days.
Yeah.
And so I think that is one of the other things that sometimes gets missed when there is contract management companies, is when a school district has decided to go into contract management company, they've kind of decided to wash their hands of school nutrition. Like, they just want the contract management company to just manage it, right? So that they can just focus on the other. But really, it takes the school district administration involvement and partnership with that school nutrition program to help make it successful.
Definitely.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Element, my favorite electrolyte drink. Element was developed by my friend Rob Wolf after he realized that a large group of people were probably living with electrolyte deficiencies and/or imbalances. Electrolyte deficiency can be the cause of headaches, cramps, fatigue, and weakness. And with the surge of low-carb, paleo, keto, and whole food diets, the body excretes more electrolytes at an increased rate, increasing the chances that you may have an electrolyte deficiency and need to supplement. Since the majority of sodium in our diet comes from processed foods, cleaning up your diet, fasting, or an increase in workouts where you sweat a lot can all cause this imbalance. The first time I drank Element, I felt immediately more alert and hydrated. Literally, like within minutes of drinking Element, and I've been drinking it ever since. They supported my hydration through my pregnancy with Toshin, and they completely rocked my milk supply. Meaning, yeah, I'm like, there's milk everywhere. I had always salted my food, but in hindsight, I know I had an electrolyte imbalance. If you're listening and you think, this could be me too, Rob is hooking my listeners up with a free sample pack. All you have to do is pay for shipping. And if you're in the United States, that means it's only $5. You can head to drinkelement.com/Kelly to snag the deal. That's drinkelement.com/Kelly to snag that free sample pack. All you have to do is pay for shipping, and it's totally worth it. Go snag it.
I mean, I can imagine it's so much easier to outsource this, right? And just to say like, whatever you bring, and that's what you feed our kids. But it is literally their future. It's their ability to learn in the class after that lunch break and that snack break. It is, do they have a stomach ache or do they feel focused? It's so much of their success growing up and their experience every day.
Well, food and physical activity are two of the most important influences on our everyday brain skills, from our memory to our concentration.
Yeah.
That's a line that I have our staff memorize. We open every meeting that we have with that. We all read that together. And it is a statement that I share with administrators when they want to make a change that I believe influences the child's experience negatively to the meal programs. Because, you know, and especially I explain it like these little bodies are, they aren't like us adults. They're absorbing every single, they're trying to extract every single nutrient, every single vitamin that they can to grow. Like they're growing at exponential rates. They're just like cell reproduction going so quickly compared to us as adults. Like it's so important that we get them the best quality food as often as we can. And so, you know, like we do buy some organics and we try and focus on those items that we think taste better and are less likely to reduce the amount of any type of chemicals and pesticides, mm-hmm. Like tomatoes and zucchini and some of our greens. And so, you know, I explain that to our parents that not everything is organic because we can't afford everything organic on $3.85 to produce a meal. That's what we get in reimbursement, right? $3.85. That has to pay for the labor, the food, the overhead cost, and hopefully leaving us a couple pennies left from every meal so that we have some money so that we can replace an oven, buy new lunch trays, repair a walk-in refrigerator, whatever those kind of costs may be, right? So we can't afford to buy everything organic, but we're going to try buying as much high-quality food as we can with that $3.85, deciding where it's going to make its biggest impact. And, you know, it's just so important that we try and set up a structure for the kids to be able to consume that. Because again, like those little cells are just trying to extract and absorb everything they can. So that they can grow and learn and be happy.
Yeah. Wow. That budget. I mean, I even know from just some financial data based on what it is to cook at home for your family per person versus what it is on average today, 2022, to take out for your family, and the average meal cost per person in a family when you're making dinners at home is $4.50 a person. And mm-hmm. the average takeout cost is $20.50 per person when you're doing like takeout, DoorDash, and those types of things. So I can't imagine running a commercial kitchen. And mind you, the $4.50 per person in a family is not paying the mom or the dad to cook the meal. That is free labor cost right there. Yeah. I can't imagine budgeting for that. And I mean, that is the hardest part because this is, this is a huge piece of their ability to learn. So when it comes to budget, how does it work when you're in a self-operating school like Hopkins District, when you have obviously a small budget, being that it's under $4 a meal to include all of those things? How are you budgeting? I'm surprised you even have the budget to think about organic for leafy greens, zucchini, and tomatoes. Like, what are you given a budget in the beginning of the year? Like, are you making the same meals over and over again? What efficiencies are you creating to be able to even sustain that number?
Mm-hmm. So there is economies of scale that make it different in institutional feeding as opposed to, you know, buying food for your house. So economies of scales always really help us in institutional feeding, meaning the more meals you're making, the more efficient you can be with the production of them. So that's kind of an important point to point out to parents, that when you're withholding your child from eating the school lunch, you're kind of reducing those economies of scale factors for your school nutrition program. And so it's better if parents can, when they want change, is to participate in the school meal program to the fullest extent that they can. Maybe not every day, you know, maybe it's chicken nugget day and they just don't want their kids to have chicken nuggets. Then, you know, maybe they bring a meal from home that day. But you want to help contribute to that economies of scale for mm-hmm. your school programs to be successful so that they have the financial means to make changes, right? And one of the things that I want to do in my consulting business is help schools find out where those entry points are so that parents will want to participate. Like, let's just get fresh fruit and vegetable bars, because that is the most important thing to start out with kids, right? Let's get those bars. Let's learn how to make different fruits and vegetables with them. So it's not always the same flavor, right? Like, we teach kids that if you don't like steamed broccoli, maybe you like it raw, or maybe you like a broccoli salad, or maybe you like broccoli and beef or something, you know, but we try and teach them that there's different ways to do it. So let's just make those fresh fruit and vegetable bars gorgeous and delicious and full of different flavors and things that they experience. And so then if you're a parent and you know that, like, okay, I'm going to have my child go to school and participate in lunch and they can have that wonderful fresh fruit and vegetable bar and a little, you know, whatever entree they might be serving for the day. Maybe it's spaghetti or something like that. So participating to help with the economies of scale is important to support your school nutrition program. And then how else we do that is we just try and balance out the cost of different things. Like, we've started a Meatless Monday program almost at the same time that we started everything else. So, you know, we've been doing it for 10 years or so. One of the things that's really nice is that that is less expensive than beef and broccoli day, right? And so we try and balance those things out on our menu. And then one of the other ways that we can do it is through our a la carte programs. Sadly enough, we, in the early 1990s, school nutrition programs expanded their a la carte programs. And that's really where so much bad food is brought in for the cafeterias, especially for the secondary students. And there is even some elementary schools who have a la carte programs, but that's, you know, chips and cookies and ice cream and all that kind of stuff. At Hopkins, we have a very strict nutrition standard. We limit calories from fat. We limit calories from sugar or grams of sugar per serving. Can't have any food dyes, no high fructose corn syrup. So it really reduces what we can offer in our a la carte program, but it's still enough that for those kids who need the extra calories, because we have a lot of athletes and people and other kids who are very active, and teenagers are growing in the, you know, very rapid rates during those years. And so they oftentimes need more than what the standard typical school meal can give them in the form of nutrition. And so they'll buy those extra foods, and a la carte food is what helps us kind of balance out our bottom line. So it would really be great if we got more federal reimbursements to help pay for our meals, so we didn't have to rely on that. I would like to completely eliminate the a la carte program, and which, you know, now with our types of meal service that we have during the pandemic, where school meals are free for all, we have not been having our a la carte program. It's been eliminated. And you know, it works out fine. But we're getting higher reimbursement rates during our response to the pandemic for our meals. And so it makes it a lot more financially stable, and we can focus on those things that really matter, which is getting kids to eat nutrient dense foods and falling in love with them and trying to find new and fun ways to present it to them all the time. So it's possible if we were to get more money to help eliminate that. But those a la carte foods really do help school meal programs see black instead of red in their bottom operating lines.
Right. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, it allows for you to have the creativity to create from, you know, fresh fruits and vegetable trays and from scratch tomato sauces and things of that nature. But yeah, it's nice to hear that during the pandemic, it was eliminated and that you had the reimbursement you needed to just have those fresh meals for everyone.
Yeah.
When someone's just getting started and they want to start cooking things from scratch, you went straight for it with the chicken. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to make our mashed potatoes from scratch first. You went for something that made people feel uncomfortable. And it sounds like where you could just be buying cans of tomato sauce, you're making fresh tomato sauce. What are some other recipes that you've found increase the nutrition density for the kids in your school, increase the confidence of the people working for you, that were incorporated to multiple meals so you got that economy of scale?
Yeah. Well, we did some really fun training with our staff for several years. We got some local Hennepin County Public Health grant funding, and we had our cooks design some cooking classes that our staff were asked to participate in. And we focused just on vegetables. It's easy to get kids to eat fruit, right? And we really wanted to increase our own staff's experiences and knowledge and acceptability of vegetables. And so, and we do have some chefs that work in our school, but we just have some really good cooks too, right? Yeah. And we wanted to
home cook.
yeah. And we wanted to demystify that thing that's going, you know, with schools like, oh, you need chefs to learn how to, you know, cook from scratch. Well, they're very helpful. Absolutely. And our oldest daughter, Cassandra, is a chef, you know, so,
yeah.
And her food's delicious. So it's very helpful, but it shouldn't deter somebody from doing it. Anybody can learn to cook. And so that's what these classes were designed to do, is to help our food production staff understand that they were more than food servers and food coaches, right? Because we don't really call them food servers. We call them food coaches, because on the lunch lines, they're coaching kids how to select foods and everything. And that they were cooks too, right? Like, you don't just cook chicken breast and chili. Like, you can make foods, different fun foods out of salads. So we were doing sauteed greens. We were doing different kinds of green beans with garlic. And we were doing pickled vegetables. Some of the pickled vegetable trays were and are, because we're doing them again this year, are amazing. And the kids love pickled vegetables. So fun story quick on the pickled vegetables. Makes me think about when we first started doing vegetable taste testing in the classroom with some of our student wellness groups. We decided that we were always going to offer a vegetable two ways, to teach kids that you might not like it this way, but maybe you'll like it this way. You know, it was often cooked and raw.
Yeah.
And we decided beets. That we would introduce kids. And I believe that year that the kids chose the vegetables, but they wanted to try beets. So we decided to dice them and cook them and season them. And then we would offer them as pickled beets. Well, the diced beets were like kind of a no-go, but the kids loved the pickled beets, right? And we walked away with the day feeling so successful. Like, kids liked beets. Wow, that was so great. You know, pat ourselves on the back. This was early on. And so time went on and we were planning our next one. And one day we were in the lunch lines and some of the students recognized us as the people that were handing out the taste for the beets. They said, "Hey, weren't you the lady that gave us the pickled beets? Yeah, they were so good, weren't they?" And they said, "Yeah, but how come we don't see them at all on our serving line?" And so then it was like light bulb moment. If you test food with the kids, make sure to put it on repeat on your salad bars. But we learned from that experience that kids really love pickled vegetables. So we really went into different ways that we could pickle vegetables. And, you know, they pickle them with turmeric and they pickle them with just all kinds of different recipes. And honestly, our cooks are so creative. I go and I enjoy and I leave the creativity to them. And it gives that gives them a lot of self-efficacy for them to know that they can design a recipe and be trusted and they just want to do more of it, right?
It's beautiful. It's being passionate about something, feeling really confident in something. That is a gift that's going to ripple into the rest of their lives, whether it's cooking or just asking for what they deserve or being in the right relationships and showing up for their kids in a specific way. Like that purpose is what we all search for in life. And I just think it's really beautiful what you've created in your school district and knowing that it's possible for other districts to create something like this and to just see like exposure is everything for kids. Mm-hmm. And you may be so surprised with what they're willing to eat, like pickled beets.
Yeah.
Where you would say like, I'd never serve that because I don't like it or because they would never like it. But just that assumption, it's cutting away at their opportunity to give it a try, which is so cool.
So one thing that we always kind of talk about in our kitchens, like we're not really allowed to say is like, I don't like it. We have to add the word yet onto it because that changes the brain's way of thinking about being reintroduced to it in the future. It actually changes the physical structure of the brain to say yet. And it gives you the belief that there's someday you're going to find a way to like it, right? So we talk with our staff, all of our staff, our department staff, the cafeteria monitoring staff, the teachers, you know, we ask them not to say kids don't like fish, you know, because every kid that's going to be within your hearing range is going to believe that when we introduce fish to them, they're not going to like it.
Right.
Your job is to say, kids, we're having fish today. How many of you have tried it before? No? Oh, you're in for a treat today. We're going to try it. And I'm sure some of you are absolutely going to love it. And some of you are going to just maybe need to eat more fruits and vegetables or something for the day. But just telling them that they're not going to like it, like, is not an option. Like, we don't do that. We use encouraging words. And it's all those subliminal things that we've kind of learned over the years. Like, they're small, but they're so impactful.
They are really impactful. It actually reminds me of my mommy and me class with Sebastian. I remember that the mommy and me leader would tell us, you need to say what's going well and what's going not so well. And at the end of whatever you've said, you have to say right now, like, Sebastian's really not sleeping well right now. Mm-hmm. Or he's really having a great time climbing right now. Like, because it's so fleeting and you don't want to label your child as a poor sleeper or a guilty as charged over here. I'm like, my kids are horrible sleepers, but no, but I mean, it's true because you can get in a rut and you can solidify that neural pathway and really believe it is so much who you are or what you like or what you don't like. And it's a really, really great tip for even just parents feeding their kids.
We don't even ask, we try not to, every now and then we do you want green beans today? Because that's just a yes or no answer, right?
Yeah.
But if we ask them, how many green beans today do you want? A little or a lot?
Yeah.
Almost every kid will take some green beans. And again, the exposure being on their tray is just half of it. And then pretty soon they're eating it. And so there's so many things that you can do.
I love it. It's you're doing God's work, in my opinion, just like getting in there, getting these kids access, really changing the school system. If you could like wave a magic wand and change the environment in our national school systems, when it came to the nutrition programs, what would be the one thing that you would do for all of the schools out there?
Oh man, there's so many things structurally wrong within our food systems, right? That I think we don't do enough in schools to teach kids better so that they become adults who know better about food systems and who choose jobs and everything differently, and how they pay people in food systems. But then there's the environment that we're asking kids to eat in. You know, those cafeterias are so busy every single day. I try and explain it, like people go, oh, but kids throw away food. Well, they throw away food in our cafeterias too. Even though they love it, they throw it away because they, and I believe that for the most part, our schools are giving the kids enough time to eat it. If the kids were in isolation and sitting by themselves, right?
Yeah.
But our cafeterias are very active, noisy, and almost circus-like. When you think about, there's a class coming in and there's a class leaving and then there's a class who just got served who's sitting. And these kids, you know, they're neighborhood schools, so they know kids from different grades, maybe brothers and sisters, maybe neighbors. So they're hollering and waving across, and you know, they're coming in from play, from the playground, so they're a little bit, you know, rambunctious yet.
And
so you have distracted eating, and the adult to child ratio is the highest that it is all day long. You know, you might have 100 students in there and have two adults. Some days, especially this last year with the shortage of staff in schools, you might have one adult. Now, how does one adult get kids to focus on what they're doing, which is to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't. All they can accomplish is some behavior management and direction of redirection of kids. Like that's all they can handle. Yeah. And so you have these very small children who are put in these large rooms where there is little to no adult interaction, engagement with what they're doing, where you find a lot of success with children like being more centered and calm and ready to eat. I mean, it has everything to do with your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous system and stuff too, right? And how you're taking in the food and how your body is using the food. But we have these examples of, usually it happens in charter schools and much smaller schools, where there is a teacher or other adult who sits down at a round table with 7 or 8 students, and food is brought in bowls and it's kind of served family style and everything. It's like, amen. Like, can we do that? Yeah. Because it's painful some days to see the food and know that the kids were excited to see it. They were excited to have it put on their tray. They are excited to take the first couple bites of it, right? But then chaos ensues and they don't eat enough of it.
Right.
And so while there's a lot of other problems, like not enough funding, need to remodel kitchens, need deep training of staff of how to cook again and how to focus on fruits and vegetables. If I had a magic wand, I think that's what I would focus on, because you can do all that. But if you don't get it in the kid's mouth, right, it's not nutrition. And so we have to do all that. But that one thing, creating the environment that is conducive to the child taking a peaceful moment to nourish their bodies and their minds and their souls and to develop connection and community with those people at the table around them.
You're making me cry.
I think that's the magic wand I would wave.
Oh, Barb, that was really beautiful. I mean, like that is, I think that's like the hardest part. Like even when you're a mom and you like want your kids to eat the food you made, like you're
right?
Just like, you just care so much. You just, and I can feel that from you, like your heart is huge. Like these kids, like that's all you want as a parent. That's all you, I mean, it's like why people decide to become a lunch lady or a teacher or, you know, like a coach of their soccer team. Like you just, you want them to experience all there is to experience in life. And you want them to be like fully nourished and living the best version of themselves. And I know it's such a struggle for so many parents who want to like control everything that goes in their kid's mouth. But I think you just brought like something to the surface for every one of, I'm sure, the moms listening, that like the environment in which they're eating really impacts their ability to calmly digest their food and absorb those nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So just such a reminder for us at home too, to set the table like truly, and to sit down and enjoy the meal as a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was just part of my upbringing. We just always ate meals around the table, even on the farm. You know, we'd come in from the barns and we'd still have lunch. Everybody would have lunch together. Dinner was every night, big meals on the weekends. And we did the same thing with our kids growing up. You know, we used to remember when we lived in Owatonna, when I was down there for those years, there was a principal who lived by us and she drove by our house every night, and through the big picture window, she could always see us sitting at the dinner table having dinner. And she's like, it's just always like, of course Barb's going to be doing that. Because it's something, even though I took that holistic health coach class in 2009, like finding my way through all of the different messages, I'm going to say, of the marketing world and everything else, I've always been trying to find really helpful information about true health and what good nutrition really means. And I feel like I finally found it in 2009, and it's made a huge difference in all of our lives. But it's always been a part of who I was. And I think part of that goes back to my family history. I have a lot of cancer in my family history, where we lost two of our sisters by the time they were age 40 and one by the time she was 50. And our first sister that we lost, I was a very young mom. Our oldest was only 9 months old. And I seen the devastation, and that happens with when a family loses a parent. And I was just like, I've got to do something to try and reduce the likelihood of that happening for us and our family. And so it was like from that moment on that I really engaged in physical activity and trying to learn about nutrition and really being engaged in it and trying to pass that on to our children for them to recognize that. But I think, you know, that's part of the real struggle these days, right? Is that the world out there is so large, and the marketing, the missed marketing messages on what nutrition is, and it's so confusing. And that's when I talk with kids, when they say, well, what about this diet or what about this diet? And I was like, you know what? There's so many diets out there, but eating food is really simple. Eat mostly fruits and vegetables, put a little bit of grains on your tray a couple times a week, doesn't even need to be every day, and a small amount of protein. And when you're hungry, eat more vegetables. Yeah. Like, that's kind of it, right? And enjoy finding different ways to make it. There's a lot of flavors that you can infuse into it that make it really exciting. It doesn't have to be just raw carrots or raw broccoli every day. Like, find fun and exciting ways to make it. But, you know, the nutrition message is so confusing, and it's almost as if it's designed that way. And I think that it's really up to people like you and your wonderful work and the products that you offer about clean labels and what people should be eating. I think that's the easier message, right? What you should be eating. Let's not talk about what you shouldn't. Let's crowd that out by just talking about what you should be eating. And in schools, I think we just have to do a better job of just even teaching kids about it in the classroom, you know?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It really is like, it's exposure. It's making these things exciting. Like, make the shoulds exciting. Like, how do we have fun with fruits and vegetables? Yeah. Like, yeah. How do we even get them in front of our kids? And then, which is, I think, a real aha moment for me today on this podcast, is really thinking about what is it to be nourished? You have to eat it to be nourished, and creating the environment for that is critically important. It's, I think, you know, having everyone sit down together as a family and have dinner, like, that's something I grew up with. And even just, I'm renting my in-law's house right now. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm at as we're getting ready to move into our first home together, like one that we own. And that's honestly, like, I'm creating the home around the kitchen and the kitchen table. Like, what is it going to be like? What's the flow like there? And that's where my heart and soul is going into, because that's like all I cannot look forward to it enough. Like, I'm getting around tables so that we can all be around the table together, not far from each other. Like, I want that closeness, and something that I grew up with, I think, is just, I feel really blessed to have had that childhood as well. And what you've given your children, I mean, it truly is priceless. So Barb, I can't thank you enough for today. I can't thank you enough for your time. You have a huge heart, and I can feel it through the Zoom screen, and just really so thankful that I got the chance to get to know you. If anyone's in the school program, I'm going to get your information. We'll put it in the show notes. Barb has a consulting company, Child Nutrition Lab. She's the director, school nutrition director for Hopkins School District. She's made major changes from scratch programs, a fruit and vegetable bar. I mean, that's somewhere that anyone could start at and get the kids involved, have them taste things, buy into the food, and create the environment that allows them to eat well. Barb, I can't thank you enough for your time. This was really, really a great way for me to start my day. So thank you so much.
Well, again, thank you for asking me. It's quite the honor to be asked to speak with you and then to represent school nutrition people around the country. I can guarantee people there are more challenges are behind the scenes that people don't see, that I think if parents get engaged and learn what those challenges are and ask their school nutrition people, what support do you need for change? How can we help you with your transformation? That would go a long ways, because they work hard and they're often very underpaid. So support for them is key to making any type of transformation.
Right.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, man, I wish that every school program went from like contract programming to sole operations, because I do feel like that ownership and that community, the parents, the kids, everybody would rally around lunch ladies, and they would be really excited about what was coming out of the kitchen, as all the kids are in your schools. So thank you so much. I'm going to put links to your consulting company and everything that you're doing in the show notes. And I can't thank you enough.
Yes. Well, again, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Thank you.